Hello, everyone. Welcome to the call tonight. This is Kurt Mortensen. Today is the 9th of January, and it is still January, brand new year. So we're going to spend a little time together. The goal, of course, is to give you a few tools, some homework to apply during the week, and take any questions that you have. Just so you know, all the recordings and questions are posted at whypersuasion.com, W-H-Y. That's where the recording will go. Give us about 24 hours to post that. You can download the recording, and, of course, you can send me questions. Those are on listening via the net or via Skype. You can send your questions that way. That's probably the easiest way to do that, as we've been talking about various laws of persuasion. So we've been talking about different laws. We did a law of verbal packaging. Today I want to talk about the law of balance. And this is the one that really makes a big difference, to understanding the balance between the logical mind versus the emotional heart. We like to think we have both, or we're mostly logical, but we do have both. And it's interesting, have you ever taken any marketing courses, maybe in a university or read a marketing book? A lot of marketing professors claim that 80% of all new products fail. Now, it's pretty high. I mean, these are big companies. And the main reason is we think that maybe they blew it, they didn't do enough research, but they've done the research. They have the focus groups and different things, but they get the wrong answers because they're focusing on the logic versus the emotion. Now, the best example is Coca-Cola, where they were losing market share to Pepsi during the Pepsi Challenge. And then they're like, well, maybe our soda needs to be a little sweeter. Maybe tastes are changing. Let's do a little research, right? That's what you do, a little research. So their research showed them that maybe they would like something sweeter. So they developed New Coke, and the blind taste test, Coca-Cola drinkers prefer the case of New Coke to Old Coke about 2 to 3 to 1. So let's say 3 to 1. So if you're the CEO, you change the flavor 3 to 1. But we find you get different results in blind taste tests than you do in regular taste tests, if they can see the label. So they came out with it. What happened? People freaked out. They were mad. See, logically, it made sense. Emotionally, they didn't realize the passion people had for the product. They've been drinking it for so many years. How dare you change the product? Cadillac, similar thing. During an energy crisis, they asked people, what if we made a more gas-efficient Cadillac? Would you be interested? Well, that sounds like a great idea. So they came out with a Cadillac Cimarron, which was about the size of a Cavalier, if you know your cars, stick shift. Logically made sense. Emotionally, that's not why you buy a Cadillac. You either want something really big or something really fast, and it was neither. Refrigerator company did the same mistakes. They found out that a lot of people, when they open their fridge, they sit there gawking, and they waste all this energy, and we're supposed to be going green. So they decided to develop a see-through refrigerator. So you can see what you want to grab it, and you're going to save over $100 a year in energy, and it's green, and people say, that's good. Yeah, I want to go green. That makes sense, logically. Emotionally, what happens is, you know, nobody wants to, you don't want people to look inside your fridge. You know, Edna comes over and says, you know, is that meatloaf or is that pudding? What's going on in there? What's happening? So here's the thing, and you've heard it before. Anytime you study persuasion and influence, we are persuaded on emotion, but once that emotion fades, we need to have the logic. Now, it also depends on personality. Obviously, with an engineer, I'm going to use a lot more logic than emotion, but we always have both. We always have to have both because there's two paths to persuasion, the emotional subconscious side and the logical conscious side. We all have both. We have different mixtures, but we all have to use both. You see, emotion inspires us to take action, and then logic justifies those actions. And that's our mistake. A lot of time we like to do the data dump. There's a list of reasons why. Here's the logical reasons. But it doesn't do it very well. So we like to say, well, and you've heard this one before, oh, feature versus benefit. But we always vomit the features. That's the logical side. So if you want to really map that out, you put logic, you put feature versus benefit in the middle, right, which means. So feature, which means, and that will give you your benefit. So you have your feature, and which means your benefit. And the reason so many people get caught up in it, because if I say the car has 400 horsepower, some of you are able to assign a benefit to that. And you're like, yeah. Some of you are like, I'm not sure. Is that good? and you weren't. So we get away with it sometimes because some people assign an emotional benefit to a feature, but most of the time it's having the opposite effect. So the main thing here is that skillful influencers are able to analyze their audience and create messages that are balanced between emotion and logic. Logic, again, is the conscious mind. Emotion is the subconscious mind, and we need to know which ones we should and should not be using. Because some emotions are great in persuasion, and some emotions hinder persuasion, and we'll talk about that. And I love what Dale Carnegie said. He says, when dealing with people, remember you're not dealing with creatures of logic, but you're dealing with creatures of emotion, creatures bristling with prejudice and motivated by pride and vanity. There's a lot of truth to that. And all the brain, what we've learned about the brain in the last 10 years, they're realizing that we're not thinking creatures that feel, we're feeling creatures that think. And that's why subconscious triggers and emotions are so powerful when we go through this step by step. In fact, here's another example. I don't know if you remember this, Intel, the computer, they make it, the computer chip, they released a computer chip that was faulty. And everyone, oh, you got a faulty chip, you got a faulty chip, and it was freaking people out emotionally. Because so logically, Intel wasn't going to, we're not going to give you money back for your chip because there's a, if you want to know another number, it's 0.00001 chance, right? Get that? 0.00001 chance that the computer would have a malfunction or have do the wrong calculation. And so they weren't going to do it. Why would they change it? Come on, that's nothing. But it doesn't matter. Emotionally, people freaked out. They were calling in. They were upset. There was a fault. There was a chance of it. And it went downhill from there. They lost a lot of money and ultimately had to replace all those chips. So let's talk about each one of these a little bit. Let's talk about logic. You know, are we rational human beings? To a certain point. But we need to know what type of logic works well. So if you're developing a presentation or writing sales copy, you need to look at the logical side. And what is logic? Well, you could use evidence. Evidence is a great, any type of evidence that you can use that makes your argument ring true and enhances your credibility. You could use testimonies. So testimony is a judgment or opinions of others that are considered experts. So a testimony could be a quote, an interview, an endorsement, a picture on your website. It could be a signature on your product. So testimony is powerful if they've heard of the person and they know who they are. If it's some person out of the blue, it's not going to help you out. Another source of great evidence is statistics. Statistics are, you know, they're numerical proofs. 4 out of 5 dentists, graphs and charts. You have to be careful here, though. Some people are suspicious of statistics, and if you've ever taken a statistic course before, you know you could cook the books. You can come up with any number you want, really. We see this in politics all the time. And if you have too many statistics, it can be really boring. So if you can pepper your presentation or your sales copy or your brochure, whatever it is you're working on, or your presentation with statistics that are believable. Okay, we're always truthful, but it doesn't mean they're believable. That believable, and you reveal the source, and the source credible, that it goes a long way. You can use facts or examples. We love examples. They're based on common experiences. Examples can be real or hypothetical. It can be a quote, a personal account, physical evidence, studies, reports. Those are very powerful. And we're pretty good on the logical side. But make sure they're clear and concise. Because we like to think that everyone's getting what we're saying, but here's the challenge. This will blow you away. So they look at people that were watching a persuasive presentation. They want to see how much they would comprehend. A lot of them were watching commercials, and some were doing some other things, but this is what they found. Here's the number. 97% of everyone, 97% misunderstood some part of every message they saw. On average, viewers misunderstood about 30% of the content they viewed. So be very careful that they understand, that we're open to verify they understand, because that's because our brains are going different directions. We don't get everything. So that's the first thing. Get your evidence. And make sure your evidence is specific and verifiable. That's very important. Make sure that if they're unfamiliar with your product, your service, your topic, that evidence is more important to use. If it's a highly intelligent audience, it's more important to use. And if it's, you know, someone that's qualified, that increases the credibility. So that's the easy part. Let's talk about emotion. So logic is the language of the conscious mind, and emotion is the language of the subconscious mind. And we know that emotions will always outweigh logic. Imagine this. Have you ever been on a cruise or been down to Mexico? You might see this sometimes. So they have these shark tanks. And there's a 12-foot shark in this tank. And they say, hey, swim with the shark, take a picture of the shark. Shark, you're like, whoa, 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 it's a shark. They say, no, it's logically. Okay, this shark doesn't hurt people. It's never attacked anyone. It's usually pretty nice. And you just need to take a swim and we'll take a picture. Hundreds before you've done it before. Here are the pictures on the wall. It's safe. But then your emotions take over. Like, what if it's a shark? What if, look at the teeth, what if? So emotions will always win the day. And that's the power of emotions, is that what happens when emotions is that people remember emotions a lot easier than logic. What does that mean? Just when you have an emotional presentation, it just flows. You don't have to really think about it. And it really, how can I put this? It's just a lot easier because they just feel it. They don't really go through a lot of cognitive energy. So these emotions, they do create movement. They do create energy. And the advantage is what it does is it actually distracts your audience from your attempt to persuade them because they're feeling emotions. They're loving the story. They're getting into it. And story is a great way to trigger emotions. Emotions require less effort than logic. And when you're doing presentations and you put more emotions on, you're rated as more interesting, they're easier to recall, and people leads more quickly to change than anything else. So we have to say, okay, well, what emotions should we use and maybe we should not use? Well, that's the question. Let me just talk about a few you really need to be aware of as far as your emotions and how we should do that. Now, first of all, there's the emotion of worry. Now, what is worry? I like to say worry is negative goal setting. There's a lot of truth to that. I mean, what do you do when someone's stuck and worried? It's a preoccupation of something that's going to happen or could happen, and it makes people feel anxious, uneasy, and concerned, and that can hurt your ability to persuade. Now, if you're doing life insurance and things like that, you could probably use a certain dose of worry. So what happens when people are stuck in worry? What you need to do is a couple things. First of all, worry a lot of times comes from indecision. So if you can get them to make a series of small decisions, their worry will decrease. Best example is probably if you wanted to jump off a cliff. Not that I'm recommending that. Or say a bridge. It was safe to do it, but you're 50 feet up. It's a long way down. The more you think about it, the more you, what if, the harder it is to jump. So making minor decisions. And with worry, you're stuck on the negative side. If someone's stuck on worry, you need to paint a positive picture. You need to help them have a vision of what you want them to do. Because when they're stuck on worry, they don't have that vision. The other one to be aware of is fear. And fear could be a great one. It's caused from danger, apprehension, harm, pain, destruction, any of those. Fear motivates us to move away from something unpleasant. Now, the key here is the right dose. Too little fear, we don't do anything. Too much fear, it actually has the opposite effect, especially with teenagers. You show them movies of people dying from drugs or being killed in car accidents. There's blood everywhere. They tend to laugh. It's just too much for them. So there is a great aspect of fear. I mean, that's why people buy guns. That's why people buy life insurance. But too much or too little fear, it could really hurt your ability to persuade and influence. Another emotion we need to be aware of is anger. Anger is a secondary emotion, meaning what we're angry about and what's bothering us are sometimes two different things. You know, why do people kick the dog? It's not the dog's fault. There's other things going on. And so when people become angry, it actually blood leaves the brain. They're not thinking as straight as they can. Now, here's something really interesting. When somebody's angry, they're mad. They're looking for someone to blame. And it's probably going to be you or your product or your company or your service. They're mad. Now, it's interesting, if they're sad, they're going to blame the situation. So mad, they're going to blame somebody. Sad, they're going to blame the situation, which could be, all right, so someone lose their job. They're angry. It's the boss. It's the, how could they do it? It's their fault. They're pointing fingers. If they're sad about losing their job, you know, it was the economy and the company wasn't doing well. It was the, and they blame the situation. The challenge with anger, it triggers non-analytical information processing. You know, what does that mean? Basically, we tend to be influenced more by intuition, knee-jerk reactions more so than when we're not angry. Most of that because the blood has left the brain. When we're angry, it goes to our fight or flight, to our hands and to our feet. Now, with that all being said, one thing you need to understand with these emotions, as a persuader, is that these emotions trigger different moods. And you need to realize that moods affect our thinking and our judgment and our willingness to say yes. When the person you're trying to persuade is in a good mood, they're more likely to accept your offer. Now, the opposite's true. When they're not in a good mood, chances are they aren't going to want to talk to you. They're going to call all the negative things, why it won't work, why they don't like you, why they don't want to listen to you. Because when negative moods have trained our minds to look for a problem and find something wrong. See, one study showed something really interesting. So three people sat down at this table to have a meal. Two were in on the study, and one was being evaluated. And they weren't aware of this. So while the food came out, the two that were in on the study conducted themselves in a very disagreeable way. They were unpleasant. They were contentious. And on another occasion, they were brought back to the same place with the same food, and this time they were given different table companions that were interesting, enjoyable, and happy. Now remember, they were there to evaluate the food, and both times they got the same food, but the evaluations were very different. And you guessed it, the first evaluation was negative, while the second evaluation was very positive. That's what happens with mood. So with mood, it triggered in studies, more time looking at advertising, have a better attitude towards the advertising, you're more willing to help people, those in need, more willing to donate, more willing to participate in an experiment, increased likelihood of an attitude change. So that's positive mood. Now, negative moods have that opposite effect. So if you could trigger a positive mood, it could be a variety of things. We know that maybe it's taking a walk. If someone's in a negative mood, what do? If you're talking to them face-to-face, they're in a negative, foul mood, I would run. You got a couple options. Reschedule if you can, maybe if it's a coworker. If not, you got to change their mood. You got to get them back into the right frame of mind, which could be food, it could be humor, it could be a boost to their ego esteem, maybe taking a walk out in the sunshine. You know, different people do different things, but you need to be aware of that. So things to ask yourself when you're talking about moods and emotions, you know, what's the situation, who's your audience, what emotion are you attempting to trigger? So what I want you to do and think about is your balance between logic and emotion. When you look at when you're talking to people or your website or your copy, whatever it is, what are you listing all the features, or are you actually talking about the emotional side of the benefits? And when you kind of analyze your conversations and how you're doing that, remember, we are persuaded on emotions. But when those emotions go away, we need to have the logic to have that balance to be able to convince people. In fact, when people come to seminars, you know, it's life-changing, it's exciting, it's very emotional, but they try to explain that to somebody else, it doesn't go very far because they're trying to explain an emotion they felt logically, and that kind of hurts people and it falls on their face. All right. That's what I want you to work on. That's one of the 12 laws of persuasion. If you want to go through and listen more on that, it's in the Magnetic Persuasion audio series. And if you have any questions, zap those through the internet or you can ask me over the phone. All right, first one Kurt, when is it more important to increase the amount of evidence that I use? All right. If it's an uneducated audience, we see this in politics, you're cranking up the emotions. If it's an educated audience, you're using a lot more evidence. So that's important to know. So if they're intelligent people. Another thing, if they don't know about the topic, they've never heard about it before, or you're trying to switch gears. Let me give you an example. I was training on persuasive presentations of people who have given different topics, and somebody got up on wanting to be, you didn't have to wear a helmet when you rode a motorcycle. Now, logically, we think that's a no-brainer. So logically, she did some statistics, then she hit us with an emotion. Her mother was on the back of a motorcycle wearing a helmet and was rear-ended, and because the helmet was so heavy, her head snapped back, and it actually snapped her neck. Tragedy. And that was kind of the balance between the two. But they needed the evidence as far as the number of deaths for people to really kind of change their mind. Another aspect, too, with evidence. The question is, when should I introduce evidence and when should I introduce emotion? Yes. I mean, obviously, you want to start off probably more with emotion and end with emotion. And there's a lot more evidence in the middle. Because evidence can be, especially statistics, maybe a little boring. But here's one thing, as we talked about verbal packaging last week, it's interesting, when you're using evidence, one thing that can help you out is when you refer to evidence as fact, let's talk about the facts. The facts show, the facts remain, it increases its weight just by saying, let's talk about the facts. So that's important when you talk about evidence. But make sure it's specific to what you're talking about and verifiable. Something they can say, well, Harvard study. Don't say I saw on the internet, even though everything on the internet's true, right? It's what we hear. So gather your evidence. It's very important. Another question about what is the difference between presenting to IT and marketing as far as the balance of emotion and logic? Well, that actually happens quite a bit, and I get that question a lot. Because there's the rift between engineering and marketing or sales. Obviously, rarely is there a good connection there. Why is that? Well, it's because they're very different personalities. Engineers are the way they talk to each other, very different, analytical, a lot more evidence. Marketing sales tend to be more amiable, more emotional. So I was given this large company, don't need to name names, and they had IT and marketing were going toe-to-toe, and they weren't communicating, and this deadline was looming, and the CEO didn't know what to do. They were blaming each other. And, you know, you think about the law of balance, you know, what would you do here? Obviously, it's the balance of the message. So what we did, we knew the issue was communication. The communication styles between marketing and the computer's information technology. And it was comparing night to day. IT, very logical. Marketing, very emotional. So everyone was communicating like they like to be communicated to. So each department thought the other department was wrong because of the different styles and the different personalities. So what we had to do is teach each department how to communicate to the other department, how to understand different personalities, how to balance logic versus emotion. And that is an issue. It's a major issue in a lot of companies because there's a big rift between the twos. And so definitely you want to use a lot more logic and statistics when you're talking to IT or engineering or even accounting. There's very different ways of doing things. Great, good question. Any other questions you want to ask me about this or other things that you're running into? I want to hear about, Kurt, are stories considered emotional? Well, yeah, stories trigger emotions. Stories persuade without detection. We talked about that a few weeks ago about story selling and stories. They persuade without detection. And that's why it's great to start off with a story to trigger the emotions that you want. Now, in a group situation, stories work well, but you have to be very careful and understand with in a group presentation, you're dealing with all different types of personalities, and you have to shoot down the middle. you have to do things that will resonate with each personality and understand how that works. For example, say I'm doing a two-day seminar. I always do evaluations. I want to know how I'm doing. I'm on track, what I need to change and do. And it's interesting, and this used to bother me, but it's interesting. It happens quite a bit. So I'll read an evaluation. It'll say, love the seminar. Thank you very much. Only feedback I have is I didn't like all the group exercises, but I love the studies and the statistics and all the examples that you gave. Okay, good feedback. Read the next one. Oh, it's changed my life. Thank you for doing this. Love the group exercises. Met a lot of good people. Wow, a lot of studies, a lot of statistics. That was almost too much. So I'm like, wait a minute. Completely opposite. And that's okay. They loved it. It was good. And their feedback were exact opposite of each other. That meant I was shooting down the middle and offered something for everyone. Because if I gave all studies and statistics, I would offend the amiable people. And if I gave all stories and all we call woo-woo and emotions, then it would affect the analytic people. So you have to shoot down the middle. Okay, good question. Any other last-minute questions? Kurt, will this ever... is there any way to do this in the wrong way? Well, obviously the balance. The key here to be in the right balance, it could backfire you if you had too much emotion, too much logic. I think what you're looking for is this. The way to make sure you're on track is you're doing the right research, you're triggering the right emotions, and you're adapting to the situation. And you could look at the pre-persuasion checklist. That'll help you out as far as what type of logic to implement. And, you know, pepper those throughout your presentation. So big key I want you to take away is careful the feature versus benefit, the logic versus the emotion. You need both. But be careful that you're not assuming that they're assigning an emotional need or a benefit to all the logic that you're listing, to all the bullets that you're going through. So work on that, and that will help you become a power persuader. So that's our call today. Any other questions, you can post them at whypersuasion.com. We'll make sure the recording gets posted on there. Get out there, persuade with power, and we'll talk to you next week.